Chapter 2.
I was born to loving parents in the city of Sunview, though now you would know it as the capital Hydon. My father was an educated man, despite growing up under the boot of the aristocracy, so my family hadn't exactly been as poor as the rest of the country. This meant I received a good education, mostly in mathematics and engineering, the latter being my father's trade, and something I myself learned to love.
"What?"
Peridon said incredulously.
"You heard me,"
Dalen spat.
"Dalen, you can barely stand. Doesn't matter. You can't deny anyone while wearing that ribbon."
"Of course I can. Light, the ribbon means I must accept every fair challenge."
"Fair? You listen now and listen good, you little snot,"
Dalen said with a growl.
"You'll grant me what my honor deserves and fight to first blood with the best of your ability. Got it?"
"I might kill you."
"Like that's far off anyway. If you deny me, I'll take back that money I gave you and tell everyone how much of a light-cursed coward you are, and that you piss yourself at the sight of your own shadow."
Peridon's mood darkened.
"You don't need to get personal, Dalen."
"Then act like a swordsman and fight me."
"A true swordsman would never accept such an unfair fight."
Dalen growled and hefted his sword into plow stance. The sword pointed diagonally toward his opponent. It took a lot of effort, but Dalen pushed himself on to advance. Peridon drew his sword and reflexively stood in wrath, which held the sword near his right ear, the blade pointed back over his shoulder.
"Stop this, Dalen," he said. "You'll just make a fool of yourself."
Dalen pushed his sword forward in a thrust, forcing Peridon to move. Peridon tried to counter with a diagonal strike from Wrath, a type of riposte meant to parry and place his sword on point for a counter-thrust. Dalen stepped to his right. It was more of a stumble, but he expected his body to move like this, which was no matter as the fight was already over. By stepping and raising his sword into a hanging parry, angled down, Dalen deflected the strike to his side and stepped forward, positioning himself inside Peridon's guard. Without pause, Dalen continued to stumble past Peridon's side, his hands moving to twist the sword around and nick Peridon on the cheek with the back edge. Dalen staggered a few more steps before regaining his footing. He let his arms drop and hunched over, wheezing heavily. Peridon spun to face him. Dalen glanced back and smiled. A small trickle of blood ran down Peridon's cheek, who touched the blood with stunned eyes.
"Impossible," he said.
"No. Practice. You have a good foundation, but are still bare as a baby's ass."
Peridon's face grew red. He had just been beaten by a very old man. Not merely old, but ancient, as few people reached Dalen's years.
"Luck,"
Peridon said.
"Then try to strike me if you can,"
Dalen said, forcing himself upright. He didn't even bother to raise a guard as Peridon took his sword in a roof stance and approached. He feinted a downwards strike but pulled back into a sideways reverse cut aimed at Dalen's head. Dalen hunched, resting his chin on his chest, and stepped forward. It was a slight movement and therefore far more manageable than the attack he had done in their first exchange, but precise. Peridon's high strike would usually be a sound move, as the other swordsmen should have raised their sword to respond. But Dalen could read Peridon like an open book. His hunched step had dodged under Peridon's strike completely, putting their bodies beside each other. With Dalen's sword pointing down, he hefted it up hilt first with both hands. The sword passed in between Peridon's arms, where the pommel struck him under his chin. Peridon's head swung back from the impact, and he fell to the ground, letting go of his sword completely. He lay there rubbing his chin, and when he opened his eyes, Dalen's sword was pointed to his throat.
"Swordplay isn't just about strength, speed, fitness, or precision, son. All those things help, true, but the most important thing
is being able to read your opponent to react with the right move. A precise strike that gets blocked is worse than a sloppy one that connects. If you know how to read your opponents, it doesn't matter if you're like me and can barely stand. You'll still win.
Peridon lay stunned for a short time before saying,
"Teach me."
"I don't have the time,"
Dalen said, dropping his sword. The energy the bringer had given him was completely gone.
"Now get up and give me a hand before I collapse."
Peridon did, and leaning on him helped Dalen become more lucid.
Light, did it feel good to swing a sword again?
It was bad for his body, but good for his soul. As it turned out, his instincts were as keen as ever. Once back on the wagon, an ordeal in and of itself, Dalen closed his eyes and wheezed heavily. His whole body hurt.
"Will you be all right?"
Peridon asked as he got the wagon moving again.
"I'll live,"
Dalen said.
"Long enough to die, that is." "I can't believe you're so good. Like, you made me feel like a kid swinging a stick around."
"Then you finally have a better gauge on your actual ability. I hope you can see how easily you'll be beaten by a swordsman from the city,"
Dalen said. Peridon's response sounded disheartened.
"Yeah,"
then he added,
"but it doesn't seem right."
"You can still carry your sword. That's every person's right. But those who wear the red ribbon in the city fight at a higher level."
"Losing isn't the end of the world. I mean, I just lost to you."
"Don't be an idiot. You know listed duels are far more intense and that deaths are common."
"Unless there's a bringer to officiate and heal the loser."
"Sure. And what if there's not? Don't be so careless with your life. You don't need to prove anything."
Peridon didn't respond, but eventually Dalen heard him untie the ribbon.
"Good lad,"
Dalen said, letting silence follow. The road Peridon drove the wagon along eventually joined a much wider one that was pointed toward the city. They were joined by other travelers here. Hand-pulled rickshaws meant for short journeys, wagons and carts, like Peridon's, bearing goods and cargo, larger darkstone-driven coaches, and those who simply walked on the side of the road. Above them flew sky coaches and the smaller dories. There was even a sky racer or two, which flew overhead at incredible speeds. They weren't practical for personal transportation, but light, they looked beautiful. Peridon eventually drove the wagon through the opening of the shield net, and they soon passed the occasional brick or stone building. Most of the buildings were made in the Baroque, neoclassical, and aristocratic styles, common through most Hamara. Even the more plain brick buildings and warehouses had small embellishments here and there that spoke of these influences, such as an archway or framed peak atop a double door entrance with classical-style pillars recessed halfway into a wall on either side. Stone-carved and stylized window frames and corbelling had been added wherever they could. The structures grew in number and height as they drove farther into the city, and paved sidewalks were now bordering the road. The buildings of Tremaine ranged in heights from 5 stories to 20.
"I've never seen buildings so big," Peridon said.
"Oh, they get much bigger than these,"
Dalen croaked back.
"I've read that engineers are building things called skyscrapers in the larger cities. 70 stories high, if you can believe it. Then there's the Lumatorium in Hydon, but that was built through a Lightbringer's last miracle."
"Oh, I've heard of the Lumatorium, but not those skyscrapers. Light, 70 stories high?
That's tall enough to reach some of the cities and islands."
Peridon nodded to the many floating buildings that either sat in the sky or on top of a tiny floating landmass called islets over the city ahead of them.
"I'd be worried they'd fall over,"
Peridon added.
They implant Darkstone into the walls of the skyscrapers, much like a sitter's foundation, to add structural support. Makes them near impossible to collapse.
Smart. And I suppose they can just move a sitter if the buildings under get too high.
No. The Darkstone holding up those buildings are cemented solidly within the foundation. Very hard to affix a driver to them.
But most of the isles were floated in.
Islets are more stable and can survive being moved, but it's still extremely difficult. The core can't be too big, otherwise you'll need more drivers than it's worth to pass the luminous threshold. Then you've got to drill into the side and hope the Darkstone isn't encased in granite or some other rock, and affix a large sunstone driver. We're talking several skyships in strength. And then you can only move it in one direction unless you drill in through the other sides and affix more. You have to fix the drivers with perfect precision, as otherwise you'll miss your target location.
Light, Dalen, you know a lot about all this.
You don't reach my age without learning a thing or two.
They passed a factory or two, and before long they were into the city proper, the smell attesting to that. Coal, smoke, refuse, sweat, and the occasional scent of bread, meat, or beer. The streets were spotted with people from every walk of life, most wearing a sword at their side, but few with a red ribbon. Those doing the most menial tasks, such as scrubbing walls and cleaning the street of trash and animal feces, were the collared slaves. Steel collars for criminals, copper for voluntary. The criminals were sold into slavery for the time of their sentence, and the date of their conviction and time of sentence etched along the collars. There were many children running about the streets, but they worked the factories too. Dalen hated child labor. It was different to the work children did in older times, where they would help their family bring in the crops or learn their father's trade. Now they were worked to death in conditions no self-respecting person should accept. Progress, they called it. Supply to meet demand. The industrialization of the world. Well, this progress struck Dalen as abhorrent. It was very hypocritical coming from him, perhaps, as Dalen wasn't exactly the perfect model of consistency or morality. Still, was a time where children had to toil endlessly for basic bread much better than when he had ruled? History considered the time of Daedalus the Conqueror and his Dawn Empire to have been dark and oppressive. The history books seem to forget his people were always fed, the children free from slave labor. He built strong roads that were still used in fall, introduced a much better measurement system. He had Himaran taught the world over, unifying the languages, though most had regressed to their native tongues once his empire was defeated. He organized and liberated the slave laws so that no one could be stolen into slavery by banditry, which the aristocracy had been happy to allow. Dalen had made child and sex slaves illegal, and no one could execute slaves without a crime fitting the penalty. He built schools and hospitals, created safety and security, but all at the cost of freedom, he knew now. He had ruled with an unwavering iron fist, killing millions of his people, not realizing that he was no better than the aristocracy he had overthrown. Peridon jerked the wagon to the left, narrowly missing a man with curly red hair who'd walked out in front of them.
"Do you want to be run over, man?"
Peridon growled over his shoulder as they drove past.
"How about you watch where you're going, you inbred country idiot?" the man yelled back.
Peridon's hand swung to grasp his sword and he started to rise, but Dalen put his hand over Peridon's, causing the man to pause.
"Sit down, lad, before you get yourself killed."
Peridon calmed himself and sat.
"He was a practiced city duelist, wasn't he?"
"Yes, and that would have been a duel to settle a personal dispute against a gentrian, judging by his curly red hair."
"He was gentrian? So what?"
Dalen sighed.
"The people of gentry fight to the death in duels to settle personal disputes. They intend to kill or be killed, and are reluctant to make such challenges as a result, but rarely ever turn them down, either.
What? Why?
They see it as the only proper way to determine a victor. Duels to first blood don't determine who would have won if the fight was real. There's many cases where you can take a cut and still win, as with grabbing your opponent's blade.
I suppose that makes sense, but Light fighting to the death over a small altercation?
He wouldn't have challenged you over what just happened, but you were about to challenge him.
Oh, Peridon said embarrassedly.
Exactly.
You would think foreigners would adopt the practices of the land they're in.
Deaths happen often enough in Hamaran duels,
but not intentionally. Shading foreigners.
Dalen huffed, looking at Peridon from the corner of his eye. Because the farmer had grown up in the country, he had so little contact with people from other countries. The world was a very big place, filled with different peoples and cultures, many of which could be seen here in this city. The blood-red hair of Frey and Gentry could be spotted regularly. The brown skin and bright yellow hair of the intellectual Chaurasian peoples walked into view as well, many showing off far more skin than the local Hamarans thought modest. The dark blue hair and olive skin of Maine was common, and the purple hues of Daisha's two nations could also be seen. Daimony and Delavi went about in their high-collared, form-fitting suits and dresses, helping identify them from the other nation to have citizens with purple hair, the Leontes, who were rare in these lands. But it was hard to miss a person from Leonta when they did appear, due to their exceptionally long hair tied in elaborate braids, and their native robes, tanned skin, and brown eyes. Though Dalen didn't see anyone from the countries of Makwe, Xantium, Tolson, Orden, Endra, or Lorraine, chances were that there was at least one person from those lands somewhere in the city. The people of Asbanidar were another story. His strongest ally during his rule, their isolation since his downfall, made the Leontes look sociable by contrast. Yet even with the mix of nationalities, green was by far the most prominent hair color in Tremaine, Hamaran blue coming second, and eye colors ranged from amber to coal brown. The rich stood out amidst the crowd. Their dress said it all. The men, with their clean, prim and proper tailed suits, with fine cravats and top hats, the women with their laced and frilly dresses and parasols. Both sexes wore finely made swords. Those women who wore hoop skirts or other wide dresses had an opening at their hips for a one-handed sword scabbard to slip through, so it wouldn't swing and tangle with their dress, and the swept hilts of their swords sat like ornamental baubles at their sides. Some women instead carried long swords with parasol scabbards that rested on their shoulders, a combination of function and fashion.
"They wear the ribbon," Peridon said, disgruntled, while looking at a couple of wealthy dandies. "But they're probably duelists, like you say."
"Not those two. Their tassels aren't long enough."
"Then why aren't they afraid of being targeted for a few easy beads? Light, I could challenge one of them right now if I wanted to."
"They both would have been trained in the best schools this city has to offer, so don't go thinking they're pushovers. Apart from that, they have very little to fear of being challenged by a serious duelist if they're from a wealthy enough family."
"Why's that?"
"The family will just hire a number of duelists more skilled to challenge the winner in reprisal, making sure to knock him down the lists."
"That's rot," Peridon said. "How is a man to learn the sword if he can't join the serious duels?"
"I suppose we should teach children to swim before they can walk while we're at it."
Peridon sniffed and said no more, directing the wagon through the streets and constantly braking for the people crossing in front of them. It was a slow process of continuous stopping and starting, which was why it was so much better to fly across the city in a skycoach or dory. As they neared the skyport, the road widened to 30 meters abreast, with hundreds of other vehicles packed side by side, many being darkstone-powered platforms floating a meter from the ground bearing great loads. A rare smile crossed Dalen's face as he gazed up. There were as many skyships above as there were vehicles below, queuing to enter the port or flying out of the city. Beautiful machines. There were many differing designs amongst the ships, each a specific model produced by a different manufacturer, but they all had distinct similarities. Skyships mostly had flat bottoms for their landing supports, and to accommodate the flat slab of darkstone that made up their core. The entire ship was fixed to that core by strong iron bracing. Those bracings would be bolted to large beams of timber, which made up the rest of the ship's frame. The sides of most ships sloped inward so that their weight would rest more securely over the cores. They were sleek and aerodynamic and looked somewhat like upside-down boats with larger rears, akin to a sea galleon. It took nearly an hour to move the 100 remaining meters into the port. The skyport was a massive expanse within the city, comprising hundreds of rectangles that sat a good 2 meters lower than the paved ground surrounding them. Piers would extend into the rectangles along their broad sides, making separate docking bays for the ships where they could load or unload passengers or cargo. The larger rectangles accommodated larger ships. Most of the skyships in port were carriers and cargo ships, but there were even a couple of runners. There were one or two trawlers and some whalers, too. It was odd for them, being so far inland, but bringing goods inland meant skyfish would sell for a better price, and all it cost them was a little more travel. Dalen couldn't see any military ships.
"Never seen so many ships in my life," Peridon said. "They're amazing."
"They are indeed," Dalen said. "Man has yet to surpass their magnificence."
He pulled his eyes from the large cargo ship they were passing, 10 stories high and 50 meters long, to look at Peridon.
"Lad, would you do me one last favor?"
"Light, Dalen, of course."
Clearly Peridon was still in a good mood from Dalen's gift.
"I need you to find me a carrier headed to one of the cities along the Dawn Gulf. Dirrenholm, Talatale, or Lightsem should do."
"Don't worry,"
Peridon said, pulling the wagon to a stop and hopping off.
"I'll find you a ship."
It didn't take long. Peridon returned and drove them to a particular carrier on the other side of the port, headed to Talatale.
"You have a ride back, don't you?"
Peridon asked as they arrived at the pier.
"I've organized everything that's needed," Dalen said. "Now, can you help me off?"
"I can do more if you like,"
Peridon said, looking to the ship. Dalen gazed down the long pier and forced himself to swallow his pride.
"That would be appreciated."
With Peridon's support, Dalen made his way to the carrier.
"Thank you for your help, Peridon," Dalen said.
Peridon nodded, letting go of Dalen.
"I'll see you when you get back. After all, I need you to teach me some of your swordsmanship."
Dalen didn't want to disappoint the man, so he lied.
"I look forward to it."
Peridon left, and Dalen purchased his ticket, first class, considering this was his last flight he wanted to enjoy himself, and checked in his Darkstone. There was very good cause for skyships to check in all Darkstone. With the speed at which skyships flew, if someone covered a piece of darkstone from light while in flight, the stone would instantly stop its movement through space. The ship would still be moving forward, making it seem like the stone shot backward, where it would rip through the entire ship and any poor soul in its way. Dalen looked over the ship as the tollman helped him aboard and smiled. He was so much closer to what he desired more than anything else. So much closer to his death. The Denwind, a light-speed model carrier produced by Hammond Light Incorporated, flew through the air with remarkable silence. Only the slightest hum from the passing wind could be heard, which was amazing, for Dalen knew a light-speed could reach speeds of 500 kilometers an hour. It was mind-boggling. Once it would have taken 18 falls for an army to march the distance he was now traveling in 2 hours. 2 hours! These falls, the far-off exotic lands, weren't nearly as unreachable. Light, the world had become a smaller place. Unlike Peridon's wagon, which used normal daylight to push the Darkstone, skyships used large sunstone hubs which were fixed all around their Darkstone core, called drivers. With inbuilt magnifying lenses, they provided much greater control, and of course much greater speeds, thanks to the more intense and focused light. Being only 2 hours, the trip seemed over all too soon when Dalen felt the ship start its descent. It had been a comfortable flight, having traveled in first class, and he had savored everything from the glorious views to the familiar soft hum of the wind outside. Once at the edge of the city's airspace, there was a brief wait as the ship queued in line to pay the entry tax at one of the floating registry stations. Any skyship that wanted to enter a city's airspace had to be marked on the registry, a procedure Dalen himself had instituted. They would then pass through this city's shield net. The ship moved again and gently came into dock. The door was opened and gangplank lowered. The passengers began to file out, and Dalen waited until last, not wanting to fight the crowd. Getting to his feet was like trying to crank a rusted pump. But he managed, barely. The tollman handed him his box.
"Do you need any help in the city, old one?"
He was a Lurian, with their characteristic sky-blue hair, reddish-brown skin, big lips, and impressive height.
"I'll manage," Dalen said. "But your help down the gangplank will be appreciated."
The tollman did so and bid farewell, returning to the ship. Being an edge city, Tallatale traded in skyfish and whale mostly, though a man with half a nostril could figure that out. Luckily, the edge winds would periodically blow away the sharp scent of fish and blubber. As was common, the skyport sat in the middle of the city. Not that they were built in the middle, just that once built, the cities often grew around them. They were the centers of trade and commerce. By the look of it, Tallatale's port was too small for the city's trade, Dalen noted. There would likely be other smaller ports placed throughout in an attempt to compensate.
"They really should have built the docks in stacks," Dalen thought to himself.
But such a thing took foresight and planning. To put stacks in the docks now, they would have to shut parts of them down, which would cause a lot of issues for the city's commerce. Dalen found himself on a dock near the industrial part of the port, and from here he could see a few sky whales being skinned at that very moment. They were massive creatures, the size of a skyship carrier, with broad, pointed flaps on either side that stretched the length of their flat bodies. This gave them a stretched diamond shape, the flaps enabling them to steer as they fell through the endless skies. Dalen pulled his eyes away, ignoring the sudden urge he had to eat a nice whale steak. He wouldn't be able to stomach the meat anyway. Light was he sick of broth. Though Tallatale was an edge city, it was still at least a kilometer away from the rim. Luckily, in cities, and especially their ports, hand-pulled rickshaws were everywhere, including along the raised pathway where the Denwind had docked. The rickshaw pullers would have known a carrier was coming beforehand. Even with the new public transportation buses, the rickshaws were still around. They could get to places that skyships couldn't. The rickshaws could have been powered by a Darkstone pusher like Peridon's wagon, but that would have been a waste for a small two-seater. Oh, there were two-seated Darkstone carts around, but they were rare, for a Darkstone pusher could power a large wagon just as well. Besides, a basic pusher cost about 100 grams, too much for a rickshaw puller, as the trade was increasingly being taken up by the poorer class. Dalen hobbled over to one of the rickshaw pullers, a young lanky man with an all-too-happy smile.
"Where is you going, Grandpa?"
the dirty runner asked, speaking in a low-born Maine accent, his dark blue hair a mess.
"To the edge," Dalen said.
"The edge?" the runner said, looking aghast.
"I can take you around the city, but you was better off catching a coach if you're heading out."
Dalen didn't want to explain that once he managed to climb into the blackened thing, he didn't want to have to climb out of it, only to get into another one. This journey was already taking its toll.
"There's a cestus in it for you."
The man's eyes widened.
"No, Grandpa, that's too much."
Dalen sighed. Only a man from Maine would haggle against himself.
"Fine, you set the price."
Four duns and five."
That was only 5 grams less, so clearly this man didn't object to Dalen's generosity as much as he let on. He just had to make a show of it. Damned Mainish.
"Done. Now can you help me onto this blackened thing?"
The runner, whose name was Leb, helped Dalen off the rickshaw.
"Much obliged, Leb,"
Dalen said, feeling rotten. The bumpy trip hadn't helped his condition. He threw Leb the cestus.
"You can go. I'm done with you."
"Grandpa, we said 4 and 5, not 50.
"I don't have change. Consider it a fee for helping me off."
"I'd be a bucket's rag if I charged you so much for helping you like that."
"No one will hear it from me."
Leb glanced about the grassy edge side as the strong wind made a mess of his hair.
"There's nothing here, Grandpa. I thought you were wanting me to take you to an edgeside inn or Leavenfall, the little village half a step that-a-ways."
"This is exactly where I want to be."
"How you getting back?" "I can wait for you if you like."
"Don't need it. I've made plans."
"But, Grandpa, off with you, you bloody sunspot, before I kick you up the ass."
Leb jumped back, looking dejected, and, after a slight pause, took his cart and began jogging away. The Mainish were by far the loudest, most contrary people in the world, though they saw haggling and correcting others as a sign of strength and respect. The fact that everyone else did it in Maine meant that the most basic conversation degenerated into shouting matches. At least Leb could take a hint. Dalen sighed and walked to a tree that stood 2 meters from the edge, taking very small steps. Thankful for the windshield, he leaned back, trying to recover his breath. It didn't come. He needed a full fall's bed rest to recover from the trip he had just endured. He gazed out into the endless cloud-speckled sky. The bright orb that was the sun sat high, shining brilliantly far off to his left.
"So it's all come to this,"
Dalen said softly, thinking back over his long life. When still young, he had endured the fourth night, when the shade had risen up and cast darkness upon the land. During the night, he had been forced to kill his own parents when they had turned. He came out of the night as a war hero, being one of the survivors of the assault on the Shade's Nest. He tried to feed the people in the wake of that war, striving to work with the old aristocracy. He had seen his wife and young children murdered in front of his own eyes. He had led a rebellion against that oppressive ruling class, overthrowing them, and becoming the new leader of his nation. He had rebuilt society and had tried to better it. But he had also killed kings and queens, men, women, and children, many with his own hands. He had destroyed cities, murdered millions, conquered nations, raped, ravaged, and oppressed the world. Dalen looked high into the sky and began to weep some of the most bitter tears of his life. It took a long time for Dalen's tears to dry. The plummet looked to have fallen nearly halfway between the land Dalen stood upon and the bottom image of the same landmass high above. High fall was almost over, and the people of the world, those that chose to spend their time during high fall, would be preparing dinner. Those few who lived during low fall would be rising about now. Dalen pulled his coat shut and did up the large buttons running down its front. Still holding the small sunstone-lined box, Dalen opened it and took out the dark stone with two fingers. He tossed the box aside. Holding the dark stone, Dalen left the tree and hobbled to the edge of the continent, which stepped down in several unmatched sections, the ground having been carried off in chunks by wind, water, and storm. It was light cursed hard to find an easy path to each lower section. Dalen even had to sit down and slide at times, which caused him great pain. At least with raised earth behind him now, there was cover from the wind that perpetually blew outwards from the continent. That was until gravity pulled the air down to join the transcontinental current. He finally came to the very edge where no ground below him extended further out. At this place, Dalen could lean out and look down without anything blocking his view except the few clouds that hung in the sky far underneath the continent. He could just see the same edge of the continent that he stood upon far below. If he had a powerful enough telescope, he could have seen himself from above, leaning out and looking down on himself and the whole world, except for the sun. The sun was an anomaly, because it was the only thing not mirrored through the barrier. Its position was constant with respect to the observer, meaning the sun would look to be in the exact same angle and distance to one person as it would to another who stood on the other end of the continent. It didn't matter if you tried to place yourself closer. As people had tested over long voyages, it was always the same distance away. The position itself was based on the angle to which the sun sat in the sky, and its approximate distance placed it beyond the upper barrier of the world. This had led to the theory that the sun wasn't physically located within the universe, but that its light shone into the universe from the outside through its upper edge. Leaning back, Dalen stood for a time looking out into the sky. Countless clouds streaked the horizon. The farthest clouds had mirror copies of themselves above and below that went on for eternity, for at such a distance the whole height of the world became a thin line.
"Finally, the end," Dalen said.
With Darkstone in hand, he stepped off to fall to his death.